Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome to another episode of Happy Mum, Happy Baby, the podcast. Today's guest is, well, she's the queen of presenting, I would say. The absolute queen. It's Lorraine Kelly!
Yay, so nice to be here.
Thank you very much.
Nice to see you.
I know, it's weird it being this way around.
I know, but it's good. I like it.
Yeah. Okay. You feel relaxed?
I do, actually. It's lovely. Sent you my cup of tea. I'm totally fine. It's all good.
This time it's you. Yeah. You've got the book.
I know. This is all a bit shining. Yeah. It's called Shine. And it's kind of, I turned 60 and I've managed to sort of absorb over the years so much knowledge and so many experiences. You talk to people like you, talk to lots and lots of different people, and I just wanted to kind of give some of that back.
Yeah.
It's a wee bit like when you climb up the ladder of your career, don't pull the ladder up, you know, leave it down, let as many people follow you as possible. And it's a wee bit like that. I just want to share everything with everyone and share my experiences of being a mom and being a wife and being a daughter and, you know, sort of all the problems and the good times and the bad times, you know, everything, absolutely everything.
And I didn't know that you grew up in the Gorbals.
Yeah. My mum and dad were really young when they got married. They were only, my mum was 17 when she got pregnant and they were just 18 when they got married. So terribly, terribly young. And they didn't have anything. Yeah. You know, they were really, really hard up and they got this wee tiny room. Now it would be called a studio bijou apartment. But back then it was
fancy.
Basically a room, tiny, tiny little room with a recess for the bed and an outside loo. And from there, they just worked and worked. That's where I get my work ethic from both of them. Worked really, really hard for me and my brother to give us the best possible life and, you know, be ever grateful to them for that.
What was the age gap between you and your brother?
6 years. Okay. 6 years. And I was a horrible sister to my baby brother. He was an angel.
Oh, really?
It didn't help that he looked, I mean, I was 6 years old, you see, and that's being usurped by this perfect child that looked like a cherub that just landed on a cloud from heaven above. There's this wee cherub and I didn't like him. I used to nip him. I was horrible to my wee baby brother. But now we get on great. Now we get on really, really well. For a short while, I did feel kind of like, who's this little cuckoo in the nest? You know, and I think a lot of kids feel like that, actually. A lot of children feel like that. So it's always given me a bit of an insight into friends' kids. You know, whenever a friend has a new baby,
yeah.
You know, I always make a huge fuss. And I always make sure that when I go and see them and everybody brings the baby presents, that I always make sure I've got a present for them too. And I always say to them, oh, I'm here to see you, but can you introduce me to your wee baby brother or sister? I'd quite like to see them, if you can be bothered.
Yeah.
If you don't mind.
This is an afterthought.
You know, but I think it's really important to make a fuss of them as well, because otherwise their nose gets out of joint and it's not fair.
Were you aware that your parents were young?
Very much so, because everyone else at school, their parents seemed an awful lot older. Like they were almost like, you know, they were a generation above where my mum and dad at that time, you know, that was sort of like when I was born in 59, end of 59. So in the 60s, when I was growing up, my mum and dad were listening to the Beatles and the Rolling Stones and Bob Dylan and Dusty Springfield and all these amazing people, whereas older people weren't listening to that. They just weren't. You know, my mum and dad were listening to Pirate Radio, Caroline and all that. You know, they were really, really quite trendy. Mum wore miniskirts and she wore her hair up and lots of makeup and all of that. So that was great. It was good, really good.
Did you ever think about you starting a family? And what?
Do you know, I was never somebody that desperately wanted children. It was one of those things that I thought, well, you know, if the time is right, that'll happen and who knows. And I was even, you know, even when Steve and I got married, I was still quite surprised to find out that I was pregnant. It wasn't something.
Had you not started thinking about it?
Really. I mean, we hadn't, you know, we were having great fun, but we hadn't sort of decided that we were going to try for a baby, but it was inevitable in a way. You know, we were lucky that I was able to get pregnant. But I do remember thinking, oh my goodness, and then thinking, I mean, I must have been, what, 30, three, I guess, when I got pregnant. And I remember thinking to myself, I don't know if I'm grown up enough for this. I don't still think I'm not grown up, for goodness sake, at this age. I remember it being completely, quite overwhelming, actually. You know, it was. It was really overwhelming and amazing. You know, I was really surprised, Giovanna. I was so surprised, as I wasn't a particularly maternal person. I was so surprised that when she was born, I mean, I know everybody tells you about this love that you feel, and I couldn't believe the feelings. I just couldn't, because I looked at her and I thought she was exactly what I'd imagined her to be.
Yeah.
In my dreams, I'd imagined her wee face. She's like a little rosebud. That's why we call her Rosie. And also I looked at her and thought, aha, now everything makes sense. This is what it's all about. It's all about having wee ones. I get it now. It was just like click, just all went into
really?
Everything just clicked into place. I was very lucky she was a good kid. Very easy.
Right.
Very, very easy. People were asking me if I was pregnant 6 months after she was born. You know, it took me a long time to lose weight.
So we're jumping around a bit, but
yeah.
You were straight back into work. You gave yourself 3 months off.
Well, it was initially. It was a strange one because what happened was I was working and always worked. You know, I worked as a correspondent for TVAM, and then I was asked to come down and be on the sofa for a week, and the week turned into a month, and then
and that must be difficult as well. And that, was that a part of you not really knowing whether you wanted kids?
Indeed.
Because you know,
it was unsettled.
Yeah, it was
quite unsettled, and I never asked to be on the sofa. I never imagined that I'd be sitting on the sofa with giant hair and a big pink jacket on and with tons of makeup on. I never thought that would be me, because I was like a journalist out getting the story. That's how I always was. What happened was I got pregnant, and then back then you never really saw pregnant women on TV. Anne Diamond was a trailblazer, and I think breakfast telly and daytime telly are always trailblazers anyway. And I worked right up until 2 weeks. I didn't realise, you know, I thought I had a month off, but I didn't. So 2 weeks after I stopped working, and I was enormous. I was an Easter egg on legs. I was absolutely huge. But it was fine. I felt great. I was fine. You know, I didn't feel ill. I just got incredibly big.
Was it something that you referenced on TV as well? The fact that you were pregnant?
Oh, sure. Well, it was. Yeah. You know, I mean, you could not. I mean, there I was. Oh, my goodness me. But I do remember, because in those days you did six right up until 9:30. So that was quite a long time. But, you know, I'm a stalwart and I just kind of got on with it. And then when I had Rosie, I had her in June and I was supposed to go back to work in September. But I basically got a call telling me not to bother. My contract wasn't being renewed. I'm freelance. I'm still freelance.
Yeah, yeah.
My contract wasn't being renewed and they were going with someone else.
I was effectively
booted out.
Yeah.
But luckily, in these things, it's amazing. Karma is a wonderful thing, because it all worked out well in the end, because a mum and baby company wanted to do a sponsored mum and baby item on the show and they wanted me to do it. So they brought me back in the November, I think. So I had a few months of going around the country with my CV under one arm and my baby under the other, you know, with the breast pump and all the rest of it. So glamorous. Looking for work. And basically, you know, because you have to.
How old would Rosie have been at that point?
Oh, months. Tiny. Really small.
So did you feel, at what point were you told that your contract wasn't
going to get renewed? Well, she was less than 3 months old. Yeah, less than 3 months old. So that was really hard.
Did you feel like it kind of, because that must have been such a big shadow, because you are the main, at that point you were the main earner.
Of course.
Did it feel like it overshadowed or kind of?
Yeah, it did actually. And it did ruin, in many ways, a time where you should be really enjoying your baby. And now, of course, it's so much better because people can take, if you're not freelance, obviously and quite rightly, people should get proper maternity and paternity leave.
Yeah.
I think it's vital. Those times, you don't ever get them back. You know, you really don't. But it did turn out all right in the end. We did the mum and baby slot. It was very successful. And then in the January, I got my own show. So it was
a little bit more than successful.
It was great. It was like, hurrah. Because I got back and it meant I didn't have to get up at 3 a.m. anymore. And I had much more time with my daughter. And it worked out really, really well. If you're going to do a job having kids, breakfast telly is wonderful. I mean, you're permanently tired.
Yeah.
You're apparently tired anyway when you've got a baby. I mean, everybody knows that. You're absolutely exhausted. I mean, I experienced levels of exhaustion I didn't really know existed, you know. Suitcases under my eyes. And like I was saying as well, it took me a long time to get back into shape. It took me years to get back into shape. And so it should.
Did you ever, was that ever a worry about, you know?
Not so much because of the job I was doing, because it was never, you know, breakfast telly is not about looks. I was never hired for my looks or my figure or how I appeared on the outside. Thank the Lord. Because basically I looked like a bag of washing, you know, in those early days. I did.
I have seen no clips of you looking like a bag of washing.
Honestly, well, they are there, Giovanna. They are there. You know, the cardigan wilderness years, you know, and I've got this big giant cardi on and I'm kind of like, my hair's all standing on edge. mean. But yeah, you go through all of that. You do. And it's and you've just got to get on with it. And, you know, that was, I didn't have a choice. You just get on with it. But what joy she has brought to my life. It was like it completed everything. It was amazing. Amazing.
Because you went, how long has your show been running now? Because obviously it's had a few different names.
Rosie's 25. Right. So me doing my own show is 25 years. But then I worked in telly 10 years before she was born. So my own show is 25 years.
Can you imagine if, so say that you'd never had that call to say we're not going to renew the contract. Yeah. And then the baby brand hadn't come. Imagine if that hadn't all fallen into place.
I know, it was amazing. It was meant to be.
Yeah.
It was sort of meant to be. It's just incredible. And we didn't have any more kids. A great source of regret for me. Mm. It wasn't something that I, you know, that we didn't go down the road of IVF or anything like that at all. It was that one of those things that we thought to ourselves, if it happens, it happens. And then the years go by and all of a sudden you're like 44 and it hasn't happened and you sort of think, maybe it's just not to be. We're so lucky to have a healthy, happy little girl. And although, yeah, it would have been lovely. I mean, I would have had a football team. But it just wasn't to be. It just wasn't to be. And like I say, time sort of ran away with us. And by the time we'd sort of gone, it really was too late.
Rosie was 5 when you had a miscarriage.
Yes, she was.
Which you've spoken about.
Yeah. And that was a really difficult time. And I think, and I do talk about it in the book, because I think, yes, of course, we should absolutely sympathise with the woman who's going through this. Mm. But nobody ever asked after Steve. Nobody ever said, how are you? Very few people, actually. The only people that did, funnily enough, were friends who'd experienced it themselves. And sadly, as we all know, far too many people experience it. I mean, I was told 1 in 3, which is horrendous. Mm. Absolutely horrendous. But yeah, I think we've got to be a little bit more considerate about everyone. And not just partners, but extended family, because you do mourn something that's not going to happen. You know,
I think, you know, you start seeing ahead.
Yeah, of
course. So you would have
plan.
Images of,
absolutely,
of the baby, Rosie.
Of course,
and...
yeah. I was thinking, because that would have been 2000, and that was like, we were saying, oh gosh, we're going to have a millennium baby. And it is odd to think that there could be a little one running around 19 years old now.
Yeah.
it's strange. And it was really sad. What did help me, though, by being open about it and talking about it at the time, because obviously I'm off work and you need to tell people why, and that wasn't easy. But the response I got from viewers was unbelievable.
Did you tell them when you came back what had happened?
Yeah, I did. I thought it was important. I thought it was important to be honest. And why should I not say anything?
That's for nearly 20 years ago. That's incredible.
Well, we had to. I felt we had to because, you know, viewers were asking what was wrong. And then when I talked about it on the show, not in great depth, but I just mentioned it, you know, and I said, just want to let you know that's why I was off. And thank you very much. Everyone was so great. And, you know, mentioning the hospital who'd looked after us and everything. And we just were inundated with letters and, you know, and really, you know, women sharing, really brave, brave women sharing their experiences with me, you know, long letters, really heartfelt. You know, people had taken real time and trouble, and that actually really helped me. It really did. It was, and again, you know, our viewers are amazing, and that helped a lot.
I think there's so many times in motherhood where you feel like you're on your own.
Absolutely.
Or you feel like you've failed. Or
you do.
You're the only one doing that,
and you're never quite sure that you're doing the right thing. And of course, it's in a way, it's better now because we've got things like your podcast. Mm. We've got things like Mumsnet. We've got all of these forums, and that's one of the great things about social media. I mean, there's a lot of darkness, as we know. There's a real dark side to it with bullying and, you know, trolls and all the rest of it. But there are shining examples of bringing people together. And, you know, if you're just feeling a bit, I would have loved to have something that I could have just gone on the internet and gone, I'm not quite sure about this. Does anybody else feel the same as I do? Am I giving her the right food? Should she be doing that? Mm-hmm. Is it right that she's not sleeping and during the day? Whatever. It just would have been lovely to have had that feedback, instant feedback, to say, you're okay.
Yeah.
You're doing fine.
Because that's all you want as a mum.
Totally. You just want somebody to say, it's fine. It's fine. You're doing all right.
For how long did you split your time between Scotland and England?
Well, we lived in Cookham. We lived in Berkshire when Rose was born. She was born in High Wycombe. And we stayed there till she was 12. And then when she was going to high school, Steve had always said he wanted to go home, and we'd always said that we would go home for her secondary school education and should she want to go into university. So we moved back to Dundee, which meant that I was up and down a lot.
Yeah.
I was pre-recording some shows, but not all of them. So I was up and down a lot, which was hard. It was hard. And Steve became the parent that said, eat your Brussels sprouts and brush your teeth. And I became the one that sort of bounced in, you know, and it was like, yay!
The fun one.
Yeah, I was. It was like good cop, bad cop. But those two have got an amazing relationship, you know, really incredible. As have we, it's very strong. But Giovanna, she's my daughter. I'm not her friend. And
this
I don't
is really
know that you
can
have that.
This is something that Liz Earle said when she was on the podcast. Yeah. She was like, you know, my
it's
kids
so
will have
true.
Many friends.
Absolutely.
They only get one mum and I need to be her mum.
And it's a different relationship. It's a totally different relationship. And I don't think for a nanosecond she tells me everything. I never told my mum everything. That's what your friends are for. Your friends are for that. But we do have a really, really close relationship. She's far more grown up than me, like I said. And I go to her for advice.
Really?
I do. Absolutely, I do. Because she's a real little wise owl. And she is great, you know, and she's very clear thinking and very organised, and she's a good kid. And likewise, she comes to me for advice too, but it's an absolute two-way street.
Yeah.
It's really good.
Did you experience mum guilt of not being there?
Oh, absolutely. Of course I did.
So now you're providing, you know,
you're always feeling guilty. And Steve, he's worked as well. He's working as a freelance cameraman, but it was difficult because he had to fit in with my hours and with her hours. And of course she's the priority and everything else just fitted around her. I mean, I remember vividly, I used to do a radio show in the morning. And I remember she was going to be in the nativity play. Now, they were 2.5 years old. So the nativity basically, you know.
Disorganised chaos.
Beyond. But isn't that the joy of joys? Yeah. The joy of joys. And she was going to be Mary.
Aww.
Big deal.
Yeah.
Huge. So I said in the morning, I said, look, I'm really sorry, but my baby's in the nativity play and I can't come in. I gave them like a week's notice. I said, so I won't be in, but don't worry, I've got somebody to fill in for me. And they said, no. And I said, excuse me? And they said, no, I'm sorry. And that's the only day off I've ever asked for. And I actually got to the point of, I said, I'll have to leave because I know I love doing the radio. It's talk radio. I love doing it. But this is like one of those moments in your life that you cannot ever get back. And I'll tell you, I cannot remember one single show I did on that radio show all those years ago. So that's like 22 years ago. I remember every nanosecond of that nativity play. I cried the whole week through.
You're going to make me cry with that comment.
I know, yeah. It's true. And it was like the baby Jesus was upside down. Joseph was picking his nose. The three wise men fell over. It was utterly joyful. It was the best thing I've ever seen in my life. It was amazing. It was absolutely amazing. And there are just some things that you cannot pass up. There's nothing that's more important than that. So luckily they sort of said, oh, okay, then you can have this one day off. And I was like, phew, thank goodness. Thank goodness. I wouldn't have missed that for the world.
Yeah. Because obviously now you've seen so many different stages of motherhood and with Rosie growing up. Have there been times, because I think it's all about push and pull.
Yeah.
And sometimes you feel you're really united and other times you feel like you've kind of fought, like pulled apart a bit.
Yeah, it is hard. And every stage, I mean, I've been really lucky that she's been such a good kid and she's never really given us any real massive problems. Of course, we went through the teenage angst. Mm-hmm. And I found a picture the other day. I was howling. I sent it to her and she was really laughing. It was a picture of us on holiday. And I've always got this thing of, oh, our family holidays, weren't they amazing? Weren't they good? And they were, you know, they really were. But there's this picture of her and it is, I mean, there's a bubble coming out of her head just saying, it's so unfair and I hate you. You know, that face. Yeah. And it was just, and I said to her, oh, here we are, a happy memory from your childhood. We were howling with laughter. It was really funny. But really, she's never really caused me any angst. All the angst has come from me, you know, from me feeling guilty and for me like sort of like feeling I should be with her more. And that's really hard. And I don't think there's any way that you can ever change that. I think if you're a working mum, you will feel guilty.
Yeah.
End of, you know, I remember one time being at work and unfortunately there was an accident. She got bitten by a dog. It was only a wee nip on her face, but it was like, but I just went, I'm away. Sorry. You know, as soon as the show was over, I was gone.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't tell me what happened until afterwards, but otherwise I would have got up and walked out halfway through an interview. They told me right away, I come off here and it was just like home like that. Because there are times where, you know, work is great, but your children are everything.
It's about getting that perspective, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's getting a balance. You've got to get a balance too. And I think it's good that she saw me working. It's good that she grew up, you know, so seeing both of us working, you know, her dad and me. And she grew up surrounded by, and it's a lovely world, you know, it's a lovely world. And she grew up with that. Not that impressed until maybe you would get Westlife in.
and then, or meet today.
You would get them in, and then it was great. You know, all of a sudden I was cool. But yeah, she's grown up round about it, and I think it's really good for our daughters, especially our daughters, our sons too, to see that their mums are out there working away, and yeah, you can do all these wonderful things. It's great.
Did you ever feel like you struck a balance?
Oh, I hope I did, but I'm not sure that I did. I hope I did. Not always. I didn't always get it right. I don't think anybody ever does. I think there's times when, you know, I was working or I was stuck at an airport or I was hyperventilating in traffic trying to pick it up from nursery or school. And no, I don't think I always got it right. But I think what she knows is that I really tried. I tried really hard. You know, I tried my best.
Yeah. And so that bond that you had was instant.
Yes.
And it sounds like that's carried on.
Oh, very much so.
So was it heartbreaking when she moved away?
It was. Giovanna, I brought my daughter up to be an independent woman.
Yep.
And then she is an independent woman. How dare she? I know you really want them to be, but at the same time, you really don't want them to be. So, it was going to university. It was the cliche when I left her, you know, in her little tiny, because she went into rooms the first year.
Right.
You know, she just went into halls, into a wee tiny, this teeny tiny little room. And we brought some of her stuff and we left her to unpack. And I just cried all the way back home. I was like, I can't believe my wee bit, and sat in her room, you know, and thought, oh my gosh.
So the thing is that it's that horrible time that passes as well. It makes you realise that how much time has gone.
By. I know. And I said to Steve, 2 minutes ago, she was a little fat baby.
Mm.
And now she's a young woman and she's in university and she's not. And all of a sudden, it's like when they go to school, you lose them a wee bit because they've gone to school and their legs get bigger. You know, and that's right. That's the way it should be. And then they go to secondary school and then they go to university and of course, they're away. They're gone. They're no longer sort of like, it's not that you can tell them what to do. I don't mean that. But it's just that they become less of a part of your life in a way.
Yeah.
Because you're not seeing them every single day and saying to them, have you, you know, and making sure they're eating properly and making sure they're taking care of themselves and they're doing their homework and they're doing all these things they're supposed to do. But of course you've got to. I mean, it would be ridiculous having a 25-year-old kiddo still with us, you know, still saying, eat your Brussels sprouts. I mean, that would be daft. She's got to go and fly. That's what you want them to do. But it's blinking hard. A lot harder than I thought it would be.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I don't want to tell her that though, because I never told her. I said, oh, we're really, you know, we're sad and we miss you a lot. But I didn't ever want her to feel in any way guilty that, you know, poor old mother's crying in a room, because that would be really a shame for her. I don't want her to feel like that.
And you left her room, like, as it was for a while.
She's got a room in her house that's exactly, I mean, she's always got a room. I know she only comes home, she's coming home at Christmas time. And I know she only comes home not that much from Singapore, but her room is there with all her stuff. It's all there. And all her like, winter clothes are in the wardrobe because she doesn't need them. Because it's really hot in Singapore, obviously. She doesn't need them, but they're all still there. I haven't thrown a thing away, not one thing.
Do you ever find yourself going in there now?
Totally.
Really?
Absolutely, absolutely. Just I'm pretending that I'm cleaning, I mean, just making sure that it's all right. But I just sometimes look quite like to, yeah, exactly. It's that thing. I mean, it's brilliant now. Again, your social media being so fantastic that we can do FaceTime and WhatsApp and things. That's wonderful. But you can't cuddle them. Or you can't. I know it sounds mad. You can't smell them. They're here. Yeah. You can't do that when it's WhatsApp. But at least I can see her little face, and that's a huge big thing.
Well, I've been thinking recently. So growing up, I got a lot of my hugs and stuff from friends or partners, and then having kids, all my hugs are from them.
Yeah,
and actually, when they go, where do my hugs come from?
I know, it's really sad. It really is, because that's the first thing I do when I see her, you know. And we're lucky we can go to Singapore and see her. But that cheerio is hard. I don't let her come to the airport.
Really?
No, because I would be a mess.
Yeah.
I try to hold it together.
Because it must feel very different leaving her at university compared to.
And then leaving her in Singapore is hard. Even though I know she's got a great job, doing really well in her career, she's doing brilliant. She's got so much more importantly, she's got so many pals and having a great time. And that makes me feel better.
Mm.
But it's still really hard leaving her. And, you know, we do both get a bit teary. And my husband sort of goes, there's a bit of that. And I can tell he's really, really, you know, he won't cry, but he feels it the same. Of course he does.
But you stay in touch a lot.
All the time. That's what's really good. I mean, although I've got that mum thing that I think happens, which is when she phones me, the first thing I say is, what's up?
What do you need? I have that. If my mum and dad phone me at the same time, I'm like, something has happened.
What's up? What's going on? What do you need? She's like, I'm just phoning for a chat. It's all right. Everything's fine. I'm just phoning to say hello. And I think that's brilliant. I want her to do that. Yeah. And I don't want her to feel beholden. I don't want her to feel that sort of guilt thing that a lot of people feel about their parents. I want her to get in touch with us if she wants to.
Mm.
Yeah, it's important.
Since she's left home, you have been on many adventures, it feels like. It's kind of like you've reclaimed a bit.
I think you can do that as well. Yeah. You know, that's one of the, I guess, one of the benefits when your children do leave is that you do have more time for yourself. And sometimes, you know, you look at your husband and say, who are you again?
we still like each other.
Let's reconnect, you know, And there is a little bit of that, you know, which is actually really good. Mm. So we've done great things. You know, we both went to Antarctica and we've been travelling all over the place. You know, I did my astronaut training, which was amazing. And, you know, there's been loads and loads of really exciting interviews and lots of really good things that we've done. But we still, you know, we still go to Singapore and we still see, she still wants to be with us, which is really good.
That's nice.
So that's good. And but obviously with her working, we don't see her as much when we go over there. But she does a spreadsheet.
Yeah.
She does a spreadsheet. Oh, yeah, yeah. You will be, at this time, you will be there and there. Oh, my holiday
which
is organised.
Because,
love
you know,
it.
If you think about the show, it's very rigid time-wise.
Love it, love it. I like to get a running order. Even on holiday, she's
so blinking organised. How often do you see her?
We try and see her in Singapore about twice a year.
Yep.
And then she comes home, hopefully, if she can, once a year. But their holidays are, you know, it's an American company in Asia and the holidays aren't huge, but it's enough for her to come home at Christmas, which is great.
That's nice. Mm. That's the best time of year to see each other.
Completely spoiler. And Steve says, what are you buying her? I'm like, oh, not much. He's like, there is enough, you know. He said it's like a shop in here.
She'll remember to take it back with her. Just sit in her
just
room.
Just another wee tiny thing. wee toty things. Yeah.
Another thing that you've touched on the show, and you've been a real pioneer, I would say, in bringing the conversation forward, is menopause.
Yeah, that's true. You know, we got... Gosh, Giovanna, we got such a huge response to that. I couldn't believe it. And it was really interesting because some of the women in the public eye that we approached say, you know, will you come on and talk about this? Wouldn't do it.
Really?
No, they wouldn't. They didn't want to appear old. So I thought, well, I'll just do it then. So we got Dr. Hillary to interview me. And then when that wee barrier had been broken, there was other women who did say yes, like Ulrika and Carol Vorderman were fantastic and talked about it. Very, very, Carol and Ulrika particularly were very, very honest and it really helped. But the response we got was unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. And then we had experts on. I mean, Dr. Louise, who's in the book, and she's evangelical and really knows her stuff. She really does. But I just talked about my experiences, which were awful. You know, I became flat. You wouldn't have recognised me, honestly. Yeah. I put a brave face on because you have to.
Yeah.
You know, we all put that brave face on.
Well, and
on,
I would imagine that you do. You go into
you
just, work.
Yeah, you go into work mode because nobody wants to see me like miserable. That would be terrible. So you just obviously you have to go into that, as we all do in our workplaces. So I did that, but I was flat. It was just flat. There was no joy. I remember going away with Steve for the weekend. We went away to Spain and it was a sunny day. It was in Cordoba, which is beautiful. We were sitting there in the sunshine and I felt blah. And that's when he said, you need to do something about this. I'm losing you. I don't know where you're going.
Really?
And it was great because he was the one that made me do something about it. Came back, talked to Dr. Hillary, lovely Dr. Hillary Jones, who there's a queue of people every morning with ailments.
I love her.
Oh,
totally
the poor guy.
So I've got this thing.
I know. I'm sore elbow. I've got sore bum. I've got sore this. I've got sore that. But he just, I told him the symptoms. He went, it's the menopause. Of course it is.
How old were you?
I must have been then probably about late 40s. Maybe early. To be honest, I got help sort of like early 50s.
Okay.
So it kind of crept up on me a little bit, I think. And I got HRT and I've never looked back. I know it's not for everyone, but for me, it's been an absolute lifesaver. Your body still changes though. So a couple of years ago, I could feel that old anxiety coming back and that old kind of feeling of, you know, like feeling a bit anxious and feeling a bit flat. And I went back and had a blood test with Dr. Louise and she just tweaked my patches, just tweaked them. So you do have to, you know, it's not necessarily you get that one course of treatment or that one treatment that works. You sometimes have to go back. But it's been amazing.
Crazy as a woman though, you kind of go through all of the stuff. Then you get pregnant, you have a baby, you go through all of that, and the baby leaves, then all of a sudden, then you're hit with a menopause.
I know, it's crazy. But so many women are experiencing it, and that's why we're living longer, and that's fantastic. And not only we're living longer, but the quality of our lives has changed completely. I mean, when I was a kid and somebody would say to me, somebody's 60, I thought of somebody with a little tight grey perm, you know, with a shapeless coat on and slippers.
I'm looking forward to that time.
You know, and a little one of those little tartan shopping bags, you know. And of course, it's not like that. I mean, you look at women, for goodness sake, Tina Turner was 80 the other day. Tina Blinking Turner was 80. She looks extraordinary. She looks amazing. I mean, she's had certain health problems, but she looks great. Mm. Dionne Warwick's 80. I mean, Joan Collins is over 80. I mean, she's in her late 80s. It's extraordinary. You know, and it's good to have these women, you know, showing us that actually be trailblazers and just get on with it.
Yeah.
Age is nothing.
Having had Rosie when you did, slightly older than your parents.
Yes, absolutely. Very
does
much
it
so.
Does it make you look back? Well, how does it make you think of them when you look back?
I don't know how they did it. Really? At that age, I have no idea how they managed, and especially they had two, and they had virtually nothing, and they managed, you know, they really did. Mum and Dad have been fantastic grandparents because they're young. You know, they're really young, so they were really able to help out a lot when she was little. They looked after her for us, you know, quite a lot if I was working. It was always, and I think if you've got your mum and your dad there, it's just great because you don't have
that
to worry.
Support network, yeah.
You
it's
just
very
don't have
different,
to worry.
I think.
It's hard now because, I mean, we were away. Mum and Dad would have to come down.
Right.
So it was all kind of quite planned. So it was never kind of like, oh, I've got to dash out to the shop so Mum can come round. Yeah. You know, we didn't have that, which I think a lot of people don't because we've all moved away and things have changed and families aren't as close now. Mm-hmm. You know, physically, they're not as close. They're not next door. But certainly that helped an awful lot. And I think as well, it's awful important when you are a mum, and it's particularly a young mum, it's all right to ask for help. Yeah. It's okay to say, do you know what, I'm feeling a wee bit overwhelmed here, and I wouldn't, because we've got this mad thing that everything's got to be perfect and the house has got to be perfect. And that's what I would always say to MD, it's just had a baby, who cares if your house is a mess?
Nobody
cares. The tidy police aren't going to come around, like Strictly Come Dancing, and go 10 or 7 or nothing. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But I was a bit like that. I got very kind of, everything has to be, you know.
Did you want to appear like Supermum?
Totally.
Like you had it all together?
Totally, of course, as everybody does. And it's only when you're in it and you've come out the other side that you realise, oh, gee, why did I waste all that blinking energy on tidying up? As long as it's clean, as long as she's not going to catch some terrible disease because your house is dirty.
I think it's also quite nice when you go to another mum's house.
So do
it's
I.
a little bit messy.
So do
You're
I.
Like, oh, it's
yeah,
normal.
You just think normal. Yeah, it's not. It isn't normal to have a baby and for everything to be utterly pristine and no little chocolate finger marks everywhere, because that's what it's supposed to be like. That's what they do, and it's fine.
So next step is being a grandma.
I cannot wait. I mean, I don't want to put any
pressure
on.
No. Yeah.
Cannot, and I've not said a word because my God. But I can't, I'm so looking forward to it. Everybody says, one of our friends, they're the first ones, they're expecting their grandchild imminently, and they are beside themselves, absolutely beside themselves. And I don't think there's anything quite like it.
Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to it, actually. I think it's going to be, it's the next step in life, isn't it? And I'm going to try not be interfering. I'm really going to try so hard not to. I want to be the fun granny. I want to be the granny that they want to go and see, and we do daft things and we do silly things, and we say, don't tell your mum that we did this, and here's another sweetie. Yeah, I want to do all that. I want to be bad. I want to be naughty. Get them to do daft things.
Have you surprised yourself as a mum?
I've surprised myself at how I took to it. I didn't think I would.
I think if you didn't even think about it.
No, it wasn't something that I ever thought would happen to me. And I'm surprised at how well I took to it and how important it was to me. Also surprised at how it made me better at everything.
Really?
Made me a better person. Made me less selfish. Made me more considerate of other people. Made me have much more empathy with other people.
Well, and that's interesting as well, I think, doing what you do, because people come on and they share
they do.
So much
I mean,
themselves.
We're so lucky that people come and share their stories with us. It trusts us to tell their stories, especially when, you know, it's quite harrowing stories too. That certainly made me better at that. I can, you know, like, sadly, when we did do stories like when Madeline McCann's mum and dad, Kate and Jerry, came on very, very soon after Madeline disappeared. And that, you know, I don't think I would have been able to do the same sort of interview had I not been a mum myself.
That's really interesting.
I really don't. Mm. And it was, God, for them, it was so, so hard. But, you know, they obviously wanted to make sure it was in the public eye. And I'll never forget it, Giovanna. I didn't say to them, but I remember afterwards I said, oh my God, I hope we're not in 10 years' time still not knowing what's happened to that little girl. And here we are, and we still don't know. And, I think about them often. I really do. Because I can't imagine what that must be like. just not knowing about your own child, just not, I mean, it would be better to know one way or another, obviously. But yeah, but it has made me better, I think, at what I do.
There must be so many stories that kind of affect you in that way.
Oh, very much
like being a mum and just kind of...
Absolutely. And linger. Sometimes it's so hard not to cry.
But have you ever cried on TV?
Yes. Once, only once. It was after the bombings in Manchester, and it was a little girl who had been murdered, who'd been killed. She lives in Barra, and in the Outer Hebrides, and they were showing footage of her her body, her coffin being taken off the beach. And I've been to Barra many times. You land on the beach; it's the most beautiful, peaceful, tranquil, scenic, safe place you could ever imagine in your whole life. And when I saw those pictures, I just lost it. And that's not like me, because I don't do that, because I don't think it's right for me to do that. But I just saw that footage, and it just brought it home to me. And I think, again, when you're a parent, I couldn't help thinking about our mum and dad. And she'd gone to that concert, you know, she'd gone to that concert, so excited, you know, leaving the island and so excited about that. And then they brought her home, and the Pipers, it was the Pipers and the, you know, the mum and dad and the family and that whole community, you know, completely, completely shattered by what had happened. So, but you, all you can do is sort of like try and tell those stories. That's all you can do. And just, you know, say just how sorry you are and hope to God that it doesn't happen again.
Mm.
No, this is the thing. Awful.
See, I'm just pants, because if someone's on here crying, I'm crying.
Yeah, I know, I know. And I try not to. It's really difficult, though, sometimes. I think it is difficult. And especially, I think, when you, you know, when you're in that stage where you've just had a baby or you are going through something like the menopause and you are feeling a bit vulnerable and you're feeling a bit sort of not as confident maybe as you should. Yeah, there has been times where it's been hard. I have had to sort of disappear to the back of the set and have a quick bubble and come back again. I mean, I was crying at my birthday celebration because we had a live link with Rosie in Singapore, and I was sobbing like you know. But that was sort of tears of happiness more than anything. But that was very emotional for me to see her little face. It was hard.
It's so cute. Yeah. And obviously now you've got your puppy. You've got your daughter, not even a puppy anymore.
He's not a puppy anymore, and I think you'll find he's my son.
Yes, your son, sorry.
He's the son that I've never had. Yes, Angus, my son. Oh, he's great. He's just so good. And one of the great things, if you're ever feeling a bit down, take your dog for a walk. Mm. If you've got a dog, take him for a walk, because you'll feel better. First of all, you're out in the fresh air.
Yeah.
And like, I mean, I've done the walk with Angus. We've got this little walk that we do around the river. I think we've probably done it about 252 times. It's like when your kid watches Frozen.
Yeah.
You watch and watch and watch. And we've probably done that. And every single time he's excited. And he finds something new to sniff. And he finds something interesting. And he's fascinated by stuff. And it just, you know, it's joyful. They're just joyful. And it's that thing of when you get home and you get the amazing reception. You can be away for 2 minutes or 2 weeks and you still get this wee thing going completely bananas, as if you're the most important person in the whole universe. And I love that.
I love it. Rosie's left home. You've got your freedom.
Yes.
And you get a dog.
Yes, absolutely. And it's the best thing we ever did.
I mean, really?
She adores him. She absolutely adores him. I mean, anytime we do a FaceTime, she's always like, where's Angus? Show me Angus. That's the first thing. How's he doing? Where is he? And we have to turn the phone around so we can show the little pictures of him walking around.
I was on the phone to my dad a little while ago and he said, oh, you'll be so proud of your brother. And I was like, really? Mario, what's he done? Oh, he's so good. And then I realised he was at an agility like course with his dog.
Oh, right, okay.
Oh, God, I was so confused. Okay, so my next book is Letters on Motherhood, which is, as it says on the tin, letters all about motherhood.
Sure.
And so I would like to know, if you were going to write a letter on motherhood, who would it be to and what would it say?
Oh, gosh, that's really hard. I think it would probably be to Rosie. And I think it would be to tell her the kind of how I really feel about, because we don't do that with our kids sometimes. Mm. We don't tell them what it was like when she was born. I would tell her exactly what it was like. I'd tell her exactly what I felt. And I would tell her about how the feelings of guilt and all of that. And it would be kind of, that's okay. It would be a letter to her, especially should she ever be lucky enough to be a mum herself. It would be a kind of almost like a reassurance. It would be, don't beat yourself up. Just love your child as much as you can. Just love them. Mm. You know, cuddle them as often as you can. Tell them they're fantastic. Always, always. And never judge them. And always be open. Always make sure the lines of communication are open so they can come to you and talk to you about anything. Because I always think it's so sad when kids can't do that. You know, if kids, especially kids, let's say kids want to come out or they want to tell their mum and dads that they're transitioning and the mums and dads shun them. I don't understand. Yeah. I don't get... First of all, I don't understand how any mum and dad wouldn't know that their child is gay in the first place, because you would. Mm-hmm. And anyway, who cares?
Mm-hmm.
Who cares? They're just your kid.
Yeah.
You know, they're your kid who you love, and that's that.
Yeah. Interesting. So I think you'd have to put that down in a letter.
Yeah.
That letter to Rosie. Because I think if you were to say it, you either say it before she becomes a mum, and then it's all a bit overwhelming. And
Why are you saying it would be that? The letter, so that she could refer back.
Yeah, exactly. And you wouldn't want to kind of do it during, because then it's kind of a bit like, it's all actually having it in a letter.
I think there's something very special about that. And it would have to be a letter, not an email.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
It has to be a letter that you put in an envelope. Mm. Yes, I think that's very important.
You must be like, what did you write there? I'm like, I don't know
what
you're writing.
I know.
And finally, we've finished the podcast on you completing three sentences.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Being a mum means?
Always having somebody to love.
Since being a mum, I?
Have become a much better person.
I'm happy when?
I'm happy when I'm with my daughter and people that I love, not doing anything very much, just laughing.
Lovely. Thank you so much for coming
on. Thank you.
This has been so weird, but so fun.
It was great. It was a conversation. It wasn't an interview, it was a conversation.
Which is what you do every morning.
They're the best ones, aren't they?
Thank you.
Amazing. Thank you, my love.